and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd. You can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, and you can find this podcast on iTunes and across at the Hardwood Paroxysm Pod Center. Doing another season preview podcast, getting through these at a pretty good rate. Today I'm going to talk a team with a couple of question marks surrounding them heading into this season, and that is the Phoenix Suns. To talk Phoenix Suns, though, I'm joined by the one and only Sam Macy of the Fantasy Fix. Sam, how are you going?
Good, mate. Self?
I'm okay. I'm good. Just ready to talk some Suns. How are you going?
Yeah, about the same. Yep. Ready to get going.
All good. Now, before we start talking Suns, where can everybody find you on Twitter, and where can everybody find your fantastic puns and photoshops and articles?
They're all over the show. At Macetastic on Twitter, and do my writing for thefantasyfix.com.
You got any articles in the pipeline about to come out?
I'm doing something on sleepers, also going to do something on contract year players, and I'm still working on this A to Z thing that I've been working on for a couple of months that goes with being me and not being able to finish anything I start. So.
Well, I've actually got both of those things coming, a contract year piece coming out as well at some point for RotoWire, and I've got a sleeper article coming out on Basketball Monster whenever I write it, which I don't know when that'll be, probably in the next few days. So you'll see those two things coming as well. But we're here to talk Phoenix Suns, Sam, a team that's very close to your heart. How do you think that they're looking? Do you think that they're a team that is getting better? Are they pushing for the eighth seed next year? Did they get worse over the offseason? How did you rate their overall offseason?
I don't think Vegas really rates them that highly, but I think the problem with last season was definitely chemistry, and they've gotten rid of a few bad eggs, but obviously Morris is still hanging over them.
Yep.
Bringing in a guy like Tyson Chandler is going to be massive. If you watch all the highlights of him, you can't show a highlight of him barking orders, telling this guy go here, covering, I've got your back. You know, everything he shouts out is defense at the rim. He's just a really emotional leader, and he's the sort of veteran that we've been lacking since, I guess, Channing Frye left. But even then, Frye wasn't a guy who lived by example. He was just a vocal guy. So it's I think we're on the up. There's going to be some shuffling in the West. I mean, obviously the Thunder are going to make their move, probably replace the Mavericks. I can't see the Mavericks getting in. Blazers are definitely going to drop. So there's definitely going to be a spot there, battling with the Jazz.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate. The Mavericks might get in, but I think it'll be a bit of a stretch for them to get to make the jump. They did lose Chandler and Monte Ellis. The Suns, look, they're going to be thereabouts. I think they're probably going to be battling for that ninth seed, even though it's not a real thing, but they're going to be right in that mix. You'd have to think that Utah is probably a little bit ahead of them at this point, but who knows? Like, we could see Bledsoe and Knight really work things out in terms of their chemistry, similar to the way Bledsoe and Dragic did 2013-14, really work things out. Booker off the bench could provide some value for them. There's a lot that could go right. It could also go very wrong, depending on the situation with Markieff Morris. We'll talk about him in a sec, but let's talk about the guys that arrived on this team, Sam. You've mentioned Tyson Chandler. Aside from him, there's a lot of garbage. Ronnie Price, John Lua, Henry Sims are all on the roster at the moment. But the other guy that is quite interesting to me is Mirza Teletovic, who was an odd situation. He had the qualifying offer from Brooklyn. They then rescinded that, and then felt like 5 minutes later he'd signed a contract with the Suns, a one-year deal. He is in line for a pretty decent role, which could become a fantastic role if Markieff Morris is indeed traded. What's your thoughts on the Teletovic signing?
I love Teletovic. I was all on board on, a train? A hype wagon, I guess, for him. And even in his rookie year when he had his best three-point shooting year, but he rarely played. But I think Teletovic, he could be a Ryan Anderson type guy. That might mean he's better suited to the bench because he's not going to be able to defend the bigger fours. But there aren't that many bigger fours in the NBA anymore. And the ones who are, the guys like Chris Bosh, Blake Griffin, they're starting to play away from the basket anyway. So Teletovic is a guy, if keeps traded and they don't get a power forward back, he's straight in line for 30, 32 minutes a game. So, I looked up his career stats when he got a lot of minutes. And I think he played about 30 games, playing about 30 minutes minimum, and he averaged about 3 threes a game, 15 points, 6 boards. Those are very capable numbers. They're not that far off Channing Frye. In fact, they're better in most stats, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
so I can definitely make an impact.
It's not 3 threes a game. No, nobody does it unless you're Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, really. And you're right, he takes such a massive percentage of his shots from three that when they start falling, that we're talking about a huge impact. Now, for his career, his three-point attempt rate is 62%. So that's not his conversion from three. That's how many shots he takes from three out of all his shots. So 62% of his shots come from deep. His per 36 numbers over the last couple of years in terms of three-pointers made, 2.7, 3.5, 2.5. And you're right, if Keith goes, look, who else are going to play there? They might go real small and play PJ Tucker there or play TJ Warren there. But there's there's a lot opening up for him if Markeith is traded. What about Tyson Chandler? How do you see his role with Phoenix? I thought it was a curious signing. I know why they were doing it in terms of trying to boost up the appeal for LaMarcus Aldridge. But with Alex Len there, it saddens me to think that they're going to minimalize Len's input this season, because I really, really like Alex Len. I thought he was coming on really strong last year. But he's going to be limited to a role of probably 20 minutes a night now. What do you think of the Chandler signing in the short term, in the long term, and what it does for Len?
I'm really 50-50 on it. I do like Len. There's some people who think Len is going to be this all-star 18 and 12 and 3 guy. I don't see that, but I can see him being like a Zydrunas Ilgauskas kind of type. 12, 14 points, 7, 8, 9 rebounds, couple of blocks, good mid-range shot, makes his free throws. I don't think Chandler being there is going to inhibit him too much. I mean, he's only 22. He's had a lot of injuries, so he hasn't played as many minutes as a guy coming into his third year probably would have played had he been a starter for the first 2 years, or even been a bench guy for the first 2 years. He'll learn a lot from Chandler. He'll learn a lot from practicing against him, watching him, seeing how Knight and Bledsoe do the pick and roll with him, they won't do pick and pop with Chandler, but Len will play a lot of minutes. I mean, Chandler's not the most... he gets hurt a lot, Chandler. He's missed a lot of games over the last 3 or 4 years. Always little niggly injuries, but 15, 20 games, I think 3 out of the last 4 years he's missed. There's going to be time.
That's absolutely going to happen. He is going to miss time. He's approaching. He's 30 years old. He's not going to be the same. Phoenix has the miraculous training staff, so maybe that helps him, but he's not going to be able to go out there and play 35 minutes a night. Currently, I've got him sitting at about 29 to 30 minutes in his projection at the moment.
Yep.
And he's a guy that's going to be a 10 and 10 sort of guy, but his biggest boost is going to be his field goal percentage. He's been a massive field goal percentage guy, led the league in that category numerous times. He's probably going to shoot in excess of 60%. And for where you're going to be able to draft him, if you need that bump in field goal percentage, there's nobody in that second half of the draft that's going to provide that sort of value that Tyson Chandler does.
Without killing your free throw.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then he adds the blocks and he adds the rebounds in. Now, his current average draft position is 75. I think that's probably right about where it needs to be. I've got him ranked head-to-head where I've got it, 81. I've got him ranked currently in my head-to-head ranking. So I think that that's right about the spot. But you can reach a little bit higher if you want, if you just really need that field goal percentage boost, because there is almost nobody that's going to be coming after him that's going to have anywhere close to the impact that he has. And he can help cancel out a guy like, say, even like a Brandon Knight, someone who shoots a 43%, and you add Chandler on, and it cancels it out and actually puts you into the positives in that field goal percentage category. So he has significant value there, doesn't really hurt you in many other spots, and then 10 boards is nothing to sneeze at as well. So he does tend to be a little bit underrated, because people do underrate at times the impact of percentages. But if he's around and you really need that bump, he's a fantastic guy to target in those later rounds in drafts.
I would have no hesitation taking Chandler over a guy like Gortat. Hassan Whiteside and Roto, I would take Tyson Chandler over Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, in Roto, no doubt for me, I think.
In the year about Whiteside and that free throw percentage, and he is like his assist total, I think he's got like 3 more assists than me over the last 6 months. He's so bad. And the Heat have already talked about only playing him sort of 22 to 25 minutes a game.
Yeah, that's a real worry.
Probably going to do, 10 points, 9 boards, 1.5 blocks, 50% free throw. That's nothing special. That's kind of Roy Hibbert, maybe.
I haven't fully dug into Hassan Whiteside in terms of what my thoughts are on him completely, but I sometimes he's going getting picked in the 30s, and that's way too high for me. There's too much of an unknown with him. It's just, yeah, it's. I'm not spending a top 35 pick on him. I know that much. No. And how excited are you for the addition of Ronnie Price?
I thought that's why we're having this podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Price is right. I actually remember seeing him. First time I saw Ronnie Price, he threw down this massive left-hand dunk over Carlos Boozer when Price was playing for the Kings. I think it was one of the top 10 plays of the year. I don't think he's had a highlight since that hasn't been, you know, like a Shaq and a Fool kind of highlight.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. He is not good. The fact that he played for the Lakers last year disturbed me to no end. He's not going to get that sort of run in Phoenix, thank God. The other guy that I didn't mention that the Suns signed is Sonny Weems, which feels like a little bit of an out of the blue signing. He's not going to play a big role, is he?
I don't know, man. I really like Sonny Weems. Okay. When I was living in Toronto in 2009, I think he was playing for them, or I think he got traded from the Nuggets to the Raptors when I was over there. And he was like, it was like watching Vince Carter. He was incredible with his highlights. Couldn't shoot anything outside of a dunk or a layup, and he only played maybe 10, 15 minutes a game. But when he got minutes, he really, you know, put points on the board, got some okay rebounds. I think he's a guy who might find his way into the rotation if one of the two young guys at shooting guard doesn't sort of catch on. I mean, it's a make or break year for Archie Goodwin. So
yeah, I guess
we'll talk about him later.
We'll talk about him later, but you're right that there is a few young guys there ahead of him. Let's talk about the guys who have left Phoenix in this offseason. Gerald Green went to Miami. And then there was the players who were traded to Detroit, which is the trade that's causing all sorts of issues still with the Suns. Reggie Bullock, Danny Granger, and Marcus Morris went to Detroit in order to clear some cap space to maybe land LaMarcus Aldridge, which obviously didn't come to fruition. And then Marcus Thornton, who didn't really play anything in Phoenix last year, he's headed over to Houston. The biggest loss out of those guys, is it Morris? Is it Green? And how do you cover those losses?
I like Gerald Wallace. I think Sonny Weems will do a very good Gerald Wallace and Gerald Green impression. Both really athletic. Weems has been able to hit the three over and playing for Cisco Moscow, but I'm not sure whether that's going to translate to the NBA. I'd imagine it would. I doubt they're going to give him I think he got a 3-year deal or a 2-year deal.
Yep.
But he got decent money. He took a pay cut to come here, so he'd have to be pretty sure of himself. Morris, it's really annoying watching Marcus Morris. Sometimes he'll drop 15 points in a quarter and you'll think this guy's mellow. And then he'll just yell at his coach, be the worst teammate, pout, be a moaning bitch, and you realize why they traded him and two other players for a second round pick that's going to eventuate to nothing.
Yeah, look, in terms of Marcus Morris and Markieff Morris, they just seem like shit blokes, really. Obviously, there's the assault issues with them, there's the complaining, the arguing with coaches, petulance. Yeah. Like, you're not good enough to behave like this. Like, no one should behave like that anyway, but you're not good enough. You're not even close to being good enough to behave in this manner. And I'm sure it gathers them lots of enemies throughout the league just because who do you think you are, basically? Morris is going
to... That's why no one's traded.
Yeah, exactly. Traded
for Markieff Morris. He's on a great contract.
Oh, it's so cheap.
Yeah, 32 mil for the next, 4 years?
Yeah.
I'd rather be paying that than some of the other deals that have gone out in the offseason.
Yeah, but he's just a headache. And look, maybe in a different environment, but still, you never know, like, what's going to happen. Like, okay, he wants to play with his brother, but grow up, man. You're in a professional job. You're not going to play with your brother your whole life, and if you are, just go start your own league, the NBA, the Morris Basketball Association.
You don't see Brook Lopez saying, I want to play in Brooklyn or I want to play in New York. I guess they're right next to each other now in New York. But Horace Grant, Harvey Grant, never played on the same team.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's
brothers and not be in each other's back pockets. These two they haven't cut the cord. It's incredible.
I've
never seen anything like it. Like this, right? That, you know, they didn't contact me about this trade. I mean, players don't get told that unless you're Steve Nash, unless you're Sean Marion or whoever. Like, you have to earn that.
He's nowhere close to that. Like, just grow up and get on with it. Like, just deal with it. You know, go ahead, play against Detroit, play against your brother, kick his ass, and have bragging rights. Not go out there and, you know, end up licking each other's ears because you miss each other so much. Like, what are you doing? Just grow up and get over it.
It'll be interesting if there's a fight between Detroit and Phoenix, who Keith goes for.
I mean, wouldn't be shocked if he teamed up with Detroit, to be honest.
I can definitely see Marcus Morris taking a cheap shot at someone.
Yeah, that anything from those two is not off the books, because we know they're immature. We know that they don't really get the whole concept of being a professional, being an athlete, being an adult, and it's just you're not good enough to be like this. Let's talk about the kids, Sam, the rookies or the guys from the last couple of drafts who might have some value for some dynasty leagues. The two guys that are sitting on this roster at the moment are TJ Warren and Devin Booker. Very different players. Devin Booker, an outside shooter, a lights out sort of guy who projects as he could be okay, but his value is majorly going to come from 3-pointers. TJ Warren can't hit a shot from anywhere out there, doesn't even bother attempting it, which is fine, but is a scoring machine. He just creates points in old school sort of ways, post-ups, floaters, that sort of stuff. Can't hit any sort of jumpers. I think they're both going to have pretty significant roles in the next couple of years. Who do you like better out of the two?
Short-term, TJ Warren. I think there's a more clear path to minutes. Knight and Blitzer are both locked up. That's basically our backcourt for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
So Booker's really got to, earn his minutes there. Not to mention we've got Bogdanović playing for Serbia at the moment. He's won the Rising Star, young Rising Star for the last 2 years over in Europe. Last guy to do that was Mirotić. So they're pretty high on Bogdanović. I think he's coming in next year, I think.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Booker's got a fantastic shot. You saw him in Summer League. It's like effortless. You can see that it's definitely just, doesn't matter where he is, doesn't matter if his feet are set or not. He's throwing it up there, and if it's not going in, it still looks good. Better than a guy like Goodwin, whose shot is just broken. He doesn't seem to have improved at all. TJ Warren, I really like. I think he's got going back to your original question. Warren, I think, will end up starting at small forward. Tucker, probably better suited to a bench role, being that energy guy off the bench, coming in, taking the defensive assignments, playing a little bit of backup for if they need him to. The only thing Warren obviously doesn't do is what you said. He doesn't space the floor at all, but he does move. So that'll open the floor up for Knight in the corners. Bledsoe to take some threes. He cuts really well. He's got great floaters, as you see. He's really, really unconventional. Kind of reminds me a bit of Anton Jameson, how he has all those little flip shots. You think you're about to block it, and then suddenly he's got the shot up already.
Yeah. So he scores in so many different ways. Apart from shooting, he just scores. And you're watching him at Summer League as well. You just had the ball and you go, this guy, he's not shooting, but it's a little bit comparing him to a modern player or a guy that's one of his peers in Kyle Anderson, in terms of they're not great shooters, but it just goes in and they know how to get to the right spot, and they know how to move to the right spot, and they know how to get their opponent into the wrong spot for them so that they can shoot. Yeah. And okay, so you think that he's going to start over Tucker. I wouldn't be shocked. I probably think they start the season with Tucker, but they probably make a switch at some point, say December, and put Warren out there, especially if they're needing scoring. And if Markieff goes, they're going to need some way to score.
Yeah.
Because Teletovic, as we said, he's an outside shooter. And in essence, you could start Teletovic and Warren, but you have Teletovic more playing the role as the three and Warren as the four, the way they play their games, obviously size-wise and body-wise and defense-wise, it's a different story. But Warren's able to play down low. Teletovic plays out on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Now, Booker, yes, his shot is great. I just don't see where the role is coming for him. Injuries aside, now, I did see him at Summer League. He was actually spoke to him at Summer League. Great guy, really, really young as well. So he's got a lot of developing. I think by the time his rookie contract ends, he's going to be 20. Or just turned 22, so he's really on the young end of things. So that's 19. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like he's super young, and it could be a situation where these contracts, like Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight, they're signed to big contracts, but they're not signed to unmovable contracts. So if he develops a chemistry with a Bledsoe or a Knight, and he's just out there doing it Klay Thompson style, hitting 25 points and getting two threes and showing that ability, then moving Bledsoe or Knight is not an impossible task if that's what they wanted to do. But for the time being, the next couple of years, he is probably going to be stuck in a bench role. and Warren is going to have more of those minutes. So if you're looking for the better option out of those two, it is probably Warren. So I agree with you there. Let's talk breakout candidates, Sam. A guy that we want to look at who's going to become either a great player from being a good player, or into a decent role player from being an irrelevant player, or any way you want to sort of describe this. Who's your breakout candidate for this team?
I don't know if we've got either who fit that exact role, but we've got kind of, I think Bledsoe could take the leap from going from good to very, very good fantasy player. And obviously Warren could go from being basically no one to being a serviceable 12 to 14 point guy. Bledsoe, I think, is really, I mean, he's 25, seems to be past his injuries. Missed one game last year, but it wasn't to injury. I think his wife had a kid.
Yep.
Maybe. Anyway, doesn't yeah, no, fantasy,
that's,
but
that's what happened.
He's definitely taking on the leadership role. He's reported into camp. I just read an article this afternoon that he's working on the pick and roll with Alex Len. So that's only going to help his value. Knight, I do like Knight, but he's definitely going to be playing off ball, which means some more assists for Bledsoe. They will share the ball, but I don't think Knight's going to need the ball in his hands as much as sort of Dragic did, and Isaiah Thomas obviously did. God, that guy was annoying. But Bledsoe is my guy. I think he can go from being, he can go to maybe being 18-point scorer, 6 rebounds, maybe, if he gets to 18, 6, 7 assists, he'll be a top 15 guy. I mean, he's already a guy I wouldn't hesitate to take top 15, top 20.
Yeah, well, my breakout guy was TJ Warren. We've talked enough TJ Warren. But Bledsoe is definitely an option. I have him listed down as my sleeper, which is the next thing we're going to get to, because his ADP is currently 33, Sam, and that's ludicrously low. I've got him ranked inside the top 20 for head-to-head. I've got him ranked inside the top 15 for roto leagues. I think that he is going to have a massive season. I think in the mock draft that we did on the Fantasy Fix, the Dynasty, when I took him in the second round, and I thought that was a steal getting him at pick 20 or whatever it was that I got him at. He is a top 20 player in my mind. You're right. Yeah. He's got a chance to be a 19-5-7 sort of guy. Throw in over a 3, throw in close to 2 steals. Pretty good percentages. The health thing hopefully is not an issue. Turnovers are an issue. So if you're playing in 9 category leagues, you're talking he's upper echelon in turnovers. He gets a lot of those, but he's a playmaker. He's going to have the ball in his hand, and you expect that from those sort of guys. The numbers he's going to put up are going to be pretty impressive. I'm really looking forward to a big season from Eric Bledsoe. There was turmoil last year with the Dragic situation, with Dragic leaving, and then with
and Thomas
and that whole situation of Thomas being there and impacting the way he was able to play. And he still put up a fantastic season. So I think that he's going to have a very, very big year. Did you have someone else listed as a sleeper for you?
TJ Warren. But we've already talked about him. His per 36 stats aren't great. I think they're about 14.6 rebounds. But if he was to play 28 to 30 minutes, there's no reason he can't do 12, 13 points, 5, 6 rebounds. He already showed in college he was a 25-point scorer. Guys who can cut and don't stop moving and move off the ball, they do put points up. You know, they spread the floor. They're not a post threat, but they still spread the floor because that defender has to look twice and think, shit, where's my man?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. That, you know, his big value is going to come in points, but he can get steals. He's going to shoot a good percentage as well. He's going to be a really efficient shooter. Decent free throws. He's not going to turn the ball over if that's something that you're looking at as well. So he's going to be a really interesting guy. He's currently being drafted to pick 140, so people are taking a flyer on him in the last round, same as they're doing for PJ Tucker, whose ADP is 143. It depends on sort of what you need. If you're looking for a guy with rebounds and threes, then Tucker's going to give you a better option. And Tucker's still going to get minutes if he comes off the bench. I don't think we need to be concerned about him being completely marginalized. Even if Warren starts and plays 30 minutes, then Tucker's going to get 26 minutes off the bench, or vice versa with those two guys. So he's still going to get some minutes and have some value. But Tucker probably won't have it all his own way like he has the last couple of seasons, where he's been a really sneaky fantasy guy who's been able to get out there and get big rebounds, get steals, get three-pointers from the shooting guard position, which that sort of combination has been pretty much impossible to find most of the time. What about a guy who's overvalued from their draft position? And I really struggled with this one for this team.
I completely forgot that question. I don't know if there's any overvalued. Maybe I think Alex Len, people are still going to take a flyer on him. Maybe a little bit early. Like, I wouldn't take Len in the top 120 unless it was a dynasty draft.
Yeah, I
just wouldn't.
I agree with that.
He's got block potential, great rebound potential, but there's just no minutes there for him right now. He even when he got minutes, his foul trouble, he just can't stay on the floor. 1 minute, he'll be 10 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks. You put him in your lineup. The next night, he's got 4 fouls in 15 minutes, and he's got 3 and 3. You can't trust that as a starting center or even as a second center. If you've got a deep bench, you can maybe pick him up and put him on the bench when Chandler gets injured. If it's a dynasty league, take a flyer on him. But I don't know what his average draft position is. What is it?
It's 143.
Okay, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's still too high. I think he's going to be inside that top 140 unless something happens to Chandler, and it's hard to grab a guy and sit in there and hope that Chandler gets injured, because you're just wasting a roster spot. Unless you've got this real deep bench or you can stash him in some other form, you're not going to just sit on him in that sort of area, because I don't think he's inside the top 150, because he's not going to get over 20 minutes a game, and that's going to really limit. Yeah, he's going to be, let's stream him in. I want 2 blocks. Maybe he gets you 2 blocks in 20 minutes for a game. Yeah, but
he's a guy you just add to your watch list. As soon as the draft's over, if he's not drafted, you add him to your watch list.
Yeah, and then
one of the first sort of guys you do.
And then you hear something happen to Tyson Chandler, and then it's bang, he gets in there. Then you can expect some bigger games. The guy that I think is overvalued is a player we've already talked about. It's Devin Booker. He's been drafted at pick 136, and I have no idea why. I don't see how he gets anywhere close to relevant minutes. I've got him currently projected at 15 minutes. Maybe that gets closer to 18, depending on how they want to run Archie Goodwin out there. But 136 seems insanity to me. I've got him ranked outside the top 300. People love rookies. That's the only explanation I have. People are infatuated by rookies. And I'll reiterate this again, Sam. Rookies aren't good. They're not good. You're going to get 1 to 2 top 100 guys. You're going to get 5 to 6 top 150 guys. And the way that people are drafting now, there's about 15 guys that are inside the top 150 from that average draft position. And it's just not going to work out. And I'm all for taking a flyer on guys at the end of drafts, and that's fine. But you've got to have it make sense. And Devin Booker in the last round doesn't make sense, because he's not going to get a role. Where's he going to get 20 minutes? Where's he going to get 25 minutes? He's just not going to, unless you're some sort of soothsayer who's predicting an Eric Bledsoe injury and knows that he's going down, and then Knight's shifting over and Booker's the starting two. It's just not going to happen. Let's talk about...
Sorry, Mark Morris. Yahoo's got him ranked 106.
Yep.
Seems too low, but I don't think it's as sort of bad, as far off as it probably looks to a lot of people. I mean, he's 26 already, played 82 games last year, played a lot of minutes, regressed in most stats. Percentages dropped, three-pointer, he took more, made more. Percentage wasn't great, though. Horrible rebounder. I think he's the worst rebounding power forward in a per-minute basis for players who started. I think I put that on Twitter a few days ago. Should remember that. But I think he is what he is. He's a mediocre guy. Like we were talking about before this started. Zach Lowe hit on it. He's just an average player. He's probably best suited for the best sixth man off the bench. Sort of Taj Gibson kind of role.
Exactly.
28 to 30 minutes. But not really a 32-minute starter. He's just not that guy.
He's currently, his ADP is sitting at 100. I've got him ranked higher than that for Roto, and for head-to-head leagues, I've got him much higher for Roto, because he's such a good contributor across the board, like both solid percentages, points, threes, rebounds, steals, half a block, even like his assists are almost at 2.5 pretty much. And he's a great contributor across the board. What was that one?
2.5 turnovers a game.
Yeah, that's
high
true.
High turnovers, 2.5.
Yeah, for a power forward, that's big. But I still think he's a value pick. Now, we don't know. We've got no idea what's going to happen. He heads to Toronto and becomes their starting power forward. He's going to get 32 minutes again. He heads to Houston, and then maybe he doesn't, because Monta Ellis is there. If they don't send Terrence Jones back, who knows where he's going to go? If he goes anywhere, who knows? We've got no idea where he's going to go and what's going to happen with him. It's risky, but when you're picking at pick 100, I think it's an okay risk, because no matter where he goes, he's going to have some sort of value at that range. He's not going to completely drop off. He's not going to get traded to a team and then play 15 minutes a night. That's not going to happen. So I think there's value there. And he might end up being a guy who gives you 2 to 3 rounds of extra value based on you drafting him at that point. So despite what sort of sick feeling it might leave in your stomach for drafting him based on his behavior, there's going to be some value there.
I just hate him. I'm not drafting him at all this year. I don't like drafting guys I can't cheer for. So I'm never really going Kobe. Never really going Keith. Well, I mean, I owned Keith in like one league last year.
So
there's something about him this year, though. Obviously, there's something about him this year. Anyway, I can't keep going down this Morris thing, man. It's getting me, getting my blood up.
So you're not so in that sort of theory, you're not targeting Darren Williams.
I don't hate Darren Williams. I just hate that he's paying that much money.
Yeah, that's so, fair enough. I can't.
Same
stand
with Joe Johnson.
No, I'll say, yes, yeah. I'm with Joe Johnson. The money's ridiculous, but I've got no issue with Joe Johnson. I just can't. I can't deal with Darren Williams at all. And in saying that, I've drafted him, I think, in two leagues already. So yeah. I have to suck it up.
I think everyone's got pet hates. My pet hate was Nate Robinson. I just couldn't stand him. Like, and then I stupidly found myself cheering for him when he hit that shot versus Brooklyn, like last year or the year before.
Oh yeah,
that quarter.
That game, that is ridiculous. If you ever go back and watch that game, watch that quarter, you think you're watching Michael Jordan because it's literally Nate Robinson. Like, what the hell is happening? When he's scoring like 30 points in a quarter or whatever he did, it probably wasn't 30, but it was something like, where did this come from?
He ruined the dunk comp, him and Chris Anderson.
He ruined it?
Can't forgive him. Ruined the dunk comp. You can't come back from that.
Fair enough. Let's talk about a guy, Sam, who's limited by their playing time, who you think that if they were given that role, a 30 to 35 minute a night role, then they become a real beast, a real fantasy animal. Who's the guy that sits in that sort of situation for you?
I like Teletovic. I talk about a lottery we both have. I just think he's got, you know, that X factor. I mean, everyone wants a stretch four now. He's played in the NBA 3 years, hasn't really had a chance to sort of stretch his legs and play a regular 28, 30-minute role. I think if they could trade Keith and get a young power forward back or a prospect, maybe someone like Jared Sullinger, you might see Teletovic start initially and then he might just hold on to the role, depending on how the team goes. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter for the next 3 or 4 years, but the Suns could do a lot worse than plugging him in next to Tyson Chandler just to spread the floor. And like you said earlier, he'd pair really well with TJ Warren.
No, absolutely. He's a guy who, yeah, if he hasn't really had that opportunity, but as you mentioned before, in the games where he's had the big opportunity, he's put up some really, really decent numbers and some really fantasy-friendly numbers. So he is someone who is worth watching. Now, the guy that I like for this situation is Alex Len. You're not as big a fan of him as what I am. I think that I was really excited for him this season, heading into his third season, injury-free throughout the preseason, which is big for him because that hasn't been the case in both of his first two seasons. I thought, yep, he's going to be out there. He's going to play 30 minutes. He's going to be a 12-10 guy, two blocks, really good free throws for a big guy, a solid field goal percentage, and then Tyson Chandler came along. But if Chandler injury goes down, I'm going to be all over Len. I'm going to be jumping on him everywhere. I'm not going to be drafting him probably in any standard leagues at this point because of what we talked about early, but I'm all over him if something happens to Chandler. I think that and even for a dynasty league, as you mentioned, I think that Chandler's contract runs 4 years. I think that 2 years in, we might see Chandler transition to a backup role, a 20, 22-minute a night role, if Len really develops. That's something that could happen. His contract is not that horrible where it's like, oh my God, we're paying this guy $15 million a year, we have to play him. It's not that bad. I think that they might transition that in a couple of years' time. Who else do we need to talk about? Let's talk Brandon Knight because, he came across and it's fair to say he was disappointing when he came across and then had that ankle injury, so we never got to see a huge amount of him in Phoenix. He was amazing in Milwaukee. He was a top 30 sort of player in Milwaukee. His average draft position has slipped. He's down to a pick of 60, which is not far from where he was drafted at the beginning of last season. I think that that's a steal at pick 60 for Brandon Knight. I think that he's going to be real. Dragic and Bledsoe work fantastically together. They both put up big numbers. There is nobody else. There's no Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench to take minutes away from them. These two guys, they can both play the one. They can both play the two. I think that a pick of 60 for Brandon Knight is superb value. I've got him ranked inside the top 40. He's probably not going to be Milwaukee Brandon Knight, but I think he's going to be really good.
I don't know why he can't be Milwaukee Brandon Knight. I mean,
yeah, that's fair enough.
He's a very, 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 very good three-point shooter. 2 threes a game, 40%. There's no reason he can't do that again in Phoenix. His assists might drop. I mean, they will drop. because he'll be playing off ball. But he's already got pretty good chemistry. He goes back to Kentucky like pretty much every guard on the Suns.
Yep.
I think if he's healthy, he's going to get 33, 34 minutes a game, which will be 16, 17, 18 points. It wouldn't surprise me if Knight leads the Suns in scoring.
No, absolutely.
He's that sort of guy. Yeah. Honestick will have faith in him. Really smart guy as well. He's really actually like IQ, very smart. So he'll see that Bledsoe is better with the ball in his hands and he'll adapt.
I think he's going to be, he's not really a sleeper, but at pick 60, it's a steal, an absolute steal for that position. He's going to have shooting guard eligibility as well, which is an extra bonus for him. He's a great free throw shooter, like fantastic free throw shooter. We're talking 85% sort of guy. He's going to hurt your field goal percentage a little bit. He's not going to turn the ball over a massive amount. He's going to turn over enough, but for a guy that's a point guard, it's not going to be in Eric Bledsoe territory or Russell Westbrook territory or anything like that. The scoring will be big threes, pretty decent assists, good steal numbers. I think that he's going to be a fantastic guy this year to look at, especially when you see these other point guards start going off the board, like when you see the run start happening on guys like Kyle Lowry and Dragic and Mike Conley, you might be able to wait around and get Brandon Knight. And I think that it's going to be pretty similar, if not better, value for him. Who else do we need to talk? Let's talk Archie Goodwin. We referenced him a little bit earlier. For some reason, he's one of my son's favorite players. I don't really know what his love for Archie Goodwin is. He has a lot of highlights. Maybe that's it. And when Ben sits down and watches, you know, YouTube highlights, top 10 dunks of the year, and Archie Goodwin appears, he's all over Archie Goodwin in that sort of sense. But what's your take on Goodwin?
I was like really, really into him. When they drafted him, I remember emailing my mate. I said, this guy looks, he reminds me of Eddie Jones, a little bit smaller Eddie Jones. Could be a fantastic two-way player. Great athlete, great length. Was played out of position at Kentucky. Was the youngest guy in the draft, I think, behind Giannis. But he hasn't grown at all since he's been in the league. Percentages are mostly down. His shot is still horrendous. He shoots it in front of his face like this. He's always out of control. He looks like he's running barefoot on a hot plate. Like, there's something wrong with him. He just can't calm down. Look at the difference between he and Booker. Booker plays under control. Goodwin is just all over the place. Always head down, going towards the basket, which is a good thing. But when your outside shot's not working, people are just going to sag off you and you're not going to get that penetration.
Is there any hope for him to become a sixth man type, a rotation guy? Do you think that he gets more minutes than Booker, less minutes than Booker this year?
I think he gets more minutes than Booker. He's got an NBA body. And he's actually a really good defender.
Yeah, like that's true.
He should be the sort of guy that he should watch Tony Allen, not on offense, watch Tony Allen on defense.
No one wants to watch that.
Similar height. He's a better athlete than Tony Allen now, similar to what Allen was when he came in, when he had hops. But Goodwin, he could carve out a niche as a 3-and-D guy if he could just work on that 3-point shot. But he hasn't improved it at all.
No, look, his advanced stats are always better on the defensive side than the offensive side. He's got a positive defensive win share, whereas he's a negative offensive win share. His defensive box score plus minus is better than his offensive one. So that's where he really needs to work on it, because his shooting numbers they're not good. He shot 14% from three as a rookie, 29% last year. He needs to get that up into the mid-30s to become a threat. And if he doesn't, Booker is going to start to take those minutes, because he's going to be a 35 to 40% shooter, and that's going to really help what the Suns are doing. But I still have some hope in Goodwin. I don't think he's ever going to be a starter, but he's a player who can become maybe a sixth man on a decent team. Is there anyone else we need to cover off on this team? I think we've talked about most guys. Unless you've got something really you want to say about John Lua.
I was just going to say, I actually really like John Lua.
Okay, let's go. Let's talk John Lua.
I wrote the stupid pun riddle thing on Lua a couple of years ago when he had a really big stretch for Memphis.
Yeah, that was crazy when he did that.
He had about 10 games and he was 15-6 or something like that.
Yeah, he was out of control.
I think he could get minutes. Teletovic has never shown, you know, he's a rebounder or anything like that. Lua is much bigger, sort of more stronger. He might play some backup five, but he's a guy that if one of those main guys, Keith, gets traded and they don't get a power forward back, or Chandler gets hurt and then goes into the starting role, there's going to be minutes there for Lua. He's a really good shooter. He's a good rebounder. He's smart. Doesn't make mistakes. No reason he can't get some minutes.
Yeah, that's fair enough. He, he is a good rebounder, like averaged 9 rebounds a game last year per 36. Doesn't do much like steals or blocks wise, but good shooter, hits threes, really athletic as well, surprisingly athletic, I think is probably the best way to put it. You know, some real highlight reel sort of plays that he can do. And he did come out of nowhere when he played those games in Memphis and put up some really big numbers for a short stretch. So the thing I always look at with that sort of thing is that, okay, you can bank on potential for guys, but when you look at it, if someone's done it before, you know that they can do it again. It doesn't mean they will do it again, but you know that they can do it. Like, you know that if Lua starts, he can do those sort of numbers. Whereas someone else, I can't think of an example, who hasn't ever done production like that, you go, they look like they maybe can, but we don't know that for sure. So you've got a track record that Lua, when given the minutes, can do something that becomes fantasy relevant. And that, to me, is pretty important when you're looking at those sort of things, especially in deep leagues. And if that opportunity arises, you know that he can do something. I hope I made that clear.
Yeah,
enough.
You don't draft him.
No.
Yeah, yeah. You never draft him, but just keep an eye on the minutes.
Yep,
and
definitely.
The trade situations, if anything.
Definitely. I just want to touch something quickly on Teletovic. We were talking about him before and his potential for a breakout. He doesn't even have an ADP listed on Yahoo, so he's not getting drafted anywhere in any real drafts at the moment. So he's not a bad late-round guy, especially if you're convinced that this Markieff situation is going to be resolved and he's going to be on his ass and out of there in the next couple of weeks. Teletovic is not getting picked up. So as a last-round pick in a 12-team league, absolutely okay with it.
Yep, if he's no good, you drop him.
Easy.
Your last round pick is really going to be a good contributor. It should be a guy you take a flyer on.
Absolutely.
Not someone you need 8 points and 5 rebounds. I'd much rather take a flyer on Teletovic than a guy like Tucker, who I know what he's capable of.
Yeah, that's. And you know what? Then if Teletovic doesn't work out, you just go and drop him and add Tucker. Because PJ Tucker, for as good as he's been, and he's been top 100 relevant for the last couple of seasons, depending on format, his ownership percentage sits at 20% or 15%. Because people just... People are always swayed by points. Not everybody, and savvy fantasy players aren't, but they see a guy averaging 9 points. Who's this guy? He's trash. 9 points? You're crap. What do you do? And it's part of the reason why Andrew Wiggins gets overrated from a fantasy point of view, because he goes out there and averages 25 points, but then he doesn't contribute in some of the lesser categories. And that's all about looking at those numbers, because people do get swayed by that sort of stuff. And it's part of the hate on Nick Batum as well, even though he was bad last year. But I don't... If he averages 10 points.
Annoying last year.
He killed me a lot last year.
So annoying last
year. But I reckon I'm gonna smash him this year, because he's going to get a bargain in the 70s.
Yeah, he will. Last year in my money league, I had I traded Brook Lopez to get Batum, because I was sure Batum was going to turn it on, and I was sure this was going to the exact opposite happen.
Yeah, Brook Lopez would be a top 3 guy.
It was a nightmare. He was top 15 over the last 2 months or something. Only playing 30 minutes a game.
I reckon he was better than that.
Batum shat the bed. It really annoyed me.
I reckon Lopez, there was a stretch where he was top 5.
He was.
A big stretch.
Yeah.
I've always been a big Brook Lopez fan. The injuries are definitely a concern. I've always been a massive fan of him for fantasy. And the fact is that he boosted his rebounds up by 2 or 3 rebounds a game, and he blocks shots, and his percentages are awesome, and is he the best offensive center in the game? Purely offensive.
Depends if you count Boogie. I don't know.
I think Lopez has got a better. Boogie. I think Lopez has got a better offensive game, marginally better. Boogie's the better player.
More polished.
Yeah,
I think.
Agree. Boogie's the better player, but I think that purely, Enes Kanter's got a pretty good offensive game as well, but he's purely offensive and ability to score, Kanter and Lopez are probably marginally ahead of Cousins, but obviously there's a lot of other parts that go into the game, and Kanter struggles in the majority of those. Let's get on to the last part of the podcast, Sam. Who's your favourite player on this team?
It's probably Eric Bledsoe. I was a massive... When he was playing for the Clippers, and we traded for him, I remember I was over here in London, and I emailed my mate back home, and I said... I'm not going to say what I said exactly here, because there's a few F-bombs in there. I could not believe we got him for as cheap as we could. I was like, this guy's going to be a star. And I sent my mate all these YouTube clips, all these chase down block highlights in there. I could not believe we got him, and we were going to pair him with Dragic. They had that ridiculous season where everyone sort of thought we'd win 20 games, ended up winning 48. And then last year, I don't know, the wheels kind of fell off a bit. People sort of questioned whether he was going to be a leader or not. It was his first full season. You got to cut him some slack. He's really embraced the leadership role this year. Came out, wore our new black jersey that they're wearing this year.
Oh, what did you think of that jersey?
I quite like it, actually. I mean, I like the really old Black Suns ones. The one from like the mid-90s.
The Barkley era.
Yeah, the black one. That was a great jersey. I got a Penny Hardaway jersey in that style. Hardaway's my favorite player, but terrible in the Suns, but that's another story. But yeah, Bledsoe's probably my favorite player. He's the most exciting player, I think, to watch.
Yeah, he's my favorite. Like, I'm big on Alex Lynn, as you heard, but Bledsoe is clearly my favorite player. And you mentioned how cheap he was. And you have to also factor in how cheap he was to acquire, like what they gave up to actually get him to Phoenix, and then what they've actually had to pay for him. It is a massive steal. And he is, I'll say it again, he's massively underrated from a fantasy point of view. If you're picking him at pick 33, where he's currently being drafted, if you're in a league with me, you're not picking him at pick 33 because he's not going to be there. He's a legit top 20 player. And, you know, we've got a big dynasty league coming up, a big auction draft. I think he's going to go for a lot.
Well, he's 25. I mean, he's 2 or 3 years away from his prime, probably. Yep. There's no reason he can't work on a three-point shot. He's shown he can hit 46, 47% from the field. He's an insane, like, really underrated free throw percentage guy. Over five a game at 80%. There's only 8 or 9 guys who can do that in the league. So,
can I tell you underrated. I'm going to tell you a sob story about his free throw percentage. Is that not last season, the season before, I was in the final matchup, final day of the season. Eric Bledsoe, yeah, he's an 80% free throw shooter. That's great. Missed his last two free throws in the last game, and I lost the free throw percentage by one missed free throw.
Bledsoe close, yet so far.
Thank you for that. The pun makes it all better. Even though it is two seasons removed, I'm still bitter about that loss. It pisses you off when you play.
I still remember stuff.
You play it. It's a 2 week final. Actually, it was on ESPN. It was one of their default ones. So it was 2.5 weeks, I think it was. It went for, and you got free throw percentage. And it comes down to like the, you know, I don't know how many attempts. Say it was like 390 out of 480, and my opposition was 391 out of 480, or something like that. And I went one free throw after 90 games for that whole time frame. And Bledsoe, who's a reliable guy, misses his last two of the season. It was, yeah.
He heard you, didn't he? Yeah. Josh, are you okay?
I'm it's always going to...
Yeah, hug. Here's a hug, mate.
Thank you. I needed that. And now I'm fully healed and I'm fully over it. And I'm back on it. I'm back on board Eric Bledsoe. But yeah, his free throw percentage is quite good, apart from when he's trying to win me a championship. Let's get on to the... you reckon? You reckon he didn't know? I'm not convinced, but... You're probably right. He probably didn't have my fantasy team's interest close to his heart. Let's go on to the fun question, Sam. Who's your favorite all-time player for the Suns?
That's a really, really hard one. I had to write down two duos, but like Nash and Amari recently and KJ and Barkley. I think it's probably Nash. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen Nash play a few times, probably about 10 games, and he's just a freak. There's sort of an aura around some guys like superstars, and you can see them, the way they carry themselves and the way everyone just goes like this with their camera to watch them. And he's the sort of guy, if you go like this, he'll stop and wave, and, you know, he's just a really good guy. Nash is the guy.
I've never met him, but he looks like that sort of guy who's going to have time for people. He had an odd career path. Like, if you look back at a lot of these superstars and their careers, you know, season one, season two, they're right into it, but he didn't really start to get going for about 5 seasons. I think that's probably about accurate. And an odd career. Then you started in Phoenix, went to Dallas, back to Phoenix. But he had a stretch there.
Yeah, but I mean, look at that Phoenix Suns roster that rookie year. He had like Cassell, Kevin Johnson, and Jason Kidd all on the team.
Yep.
Same time. Still, I don't trade him. But Don Nelson stuck with him. I mean, he basically has his career because of his hard work, obviously. But if Nelson hadn't stuck with him, there's no reason he couldn't end up someone like Luke Ridnour's career.
Yeah, absolutely. But his court vision is pretty much unparalleled in recent times. His shooting was amazing. His ability to hit.
Best shooter ever. Best
shooter ever. He, well, let's look. His 3-point percentages. Okay, so he's I'm going to add this up on the fly because I didn't do it beforehand. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Out of his first 15 seasons, he hit 40% from three 14 times.
Yep.
That's unheard of.
Incredible.
Unheard of.
His career line, people talk about that whole 50-40-90. I think he's done it three times, maybe four times. His career is 49-43-90.
Yeah, that's crazy. Incredible. And then the double digit assists as well, where he had a run of six seasons out of seven where he had double digit assists. Actually, more than that, seven out of eight seasons, and the one in the middle was 9.7 assists.
I hate looking at Basketball Reference's in the last 2 years that he played for the Lakers.
Oh, how yuck are they?
Think about them. See this guy with this short haircut, this tight little number 10, and I'm like, that's not Steve Nash. That's not Steve Nash.
No, it's a bad way for him to go out. But that's the way it happens. You look back at everyone's yesterday's podcast, looking at the Rockets, and you look at Hakeem's numbers, and then the last season he played in Toronto. What's this? This doesn't need
look
to be
Patrick here. Look at Patrick Ewing himself at Orlando and Seattle. Ugh. Horrible.
Yeah, it's not a good... It's never good, but just... Yeah, it's like Jordan at the Wizards.
Yeah, but at least he was an all-star still doing 20 points in his sleep.
Yeah, but he is
but
also...
But it was tough seeing that.
He's also a freak, so you can sort of expect that, but it doesn't happen for everyone. And but Nash is clearly... You know what about him as well? He's just a fun guy to watch. Like, it's just super fun to watch. Like, I love watching guys who are able to pass. And I love, now I can sit down and watch, like, Jason Williams mixtapes from, when he's 45 years old playing in an Orlando Pro-Am. Did you watch that video that came out a few weeks back?
Yeah.
It was insanity. It was just... we're talking about watching 45-year-old guys just play hoops. And it's crazy. I love watching that stuff. I think maybe I envisage myself as someone who can sort of see things happen and pass, and I go, wish I could be that sort of guy. That's because I'm not super athletic, I'm not a good shooter, but I feel like I can pass pretty well, and I can see things happening. So that's what draws me to certain players, is that I can see myself if I was actually good in that sort of role. And Steve Nash is one of those guys. The other guy I had written down. Go ahead.
Maybe you'll get 45.
Maybe there's still time. The other guy I had written down for mine, Sam, is Thunder Dan Majerle. He was a big favorite of mine back in the mid-90s. He was seemingly had no limit to his range from three.
Yep.
He wasn't hitting from three. He was hitting from half court. If any of you younger people listening didn't watch Dan Majerle play, but you remember Jimmy Fredette play at BYU in college, when he'd just take it up over half court and just start shooting, that's what Majerle was like. He wouldn't have his feet at the line. He'd just be anywhere. Like, just throw him the ball and it goes in from anywhere. He was deadly and from very, very long range. And he was a really good scorer. He averaged over 15 points for 4 or 5 years in a row, hitting two threes a game. He was a good defender, really good defender as well. He had almost 1.5 steals for about 6 or 7 years in a row. Really, really fun guy. And he was in that Barkley era, KJ era Suns, which were a super fun team as well. Like, him, KJ, Barkley, it was a great trio. And I think he was an all-star a couple of seasons as well.
A couple of times. I think he was all-star off the bench 1 year.
I think that sounds about right. But he was really fun to watch, because it's fun just watching a guy that you don't know when he's going to shoot and from where it is, and he's going, come on. And then he's taking a shot from the half-court line and doing it effortlessly.
And he's got a bar right next to the Phoenix Suns arena.
Oh, does he? And he's coaching somewhere now, I think. Some college?
College, I think, yeah. Yeah. I think he was pretty pissed in the Suns job when Lindsay Hunter got it.
No, yes, yep. Yeah,
we all...
Good old Lindsay Hunter.
Oh, that guy.
And
not my kind of guy.
After yesterday's podcast, where I was going through all these past stats and talking with Benyam about these stats, I had a couple of people email me about it and have wasted plenty of time of their life going through stuff. But if you want to have a look, it's rotomonster.com, and you can go through it, all these past fantasy rankings. Sam, how long do you reckon you could spend looking through this stuff?
Hours, man, honestly. I'll tell you one guy to look at who people mock the hell out of him. Oliver Miller.
Oh.
No, honestly, look up his season.
I'm bringing it up now.
95-96.
Okay.
Just what rank he was.
41.
Yeah, look, 13 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.9 assists, 1.4 steals, 1.9 blocks, 53 from the field, 66 from the line.
Jesus.
That's insane stats.
Three assists from a guy
that's what you want Josh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And one. That's what you want Josh Smith to do.
Three assists from a guy that weighed 500 pounds. That's a fantastic effort. He had another season where he got three assists when he was in Toronto in 97-98. In only 25 minutes a game, yeah, as a centre, he had three assists. That's crazy.
Look at his counting stats in the second year. 26 minutes a game, 7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 2.3 blocks. Those are massive numbers.
In 26 minutes, and he shot 61% from the field.
Yeah. So his per 36 is that year, 13 points, 10 boards, 5 assists, 1.7 steals, 3.1 blocks.
That's crazy. I remember getting an Oliver Miller rookie card in my Upper Deck collection, and
the jam section, one of those long cards. You know, they're really long.
It wasn't one of those, but I do remember that I had heaps of basketball. And you know what? There's a guy, and I can't remember who it was on Twitter that I saw yesterday, that is recreating old basketball cards with current players. And he did a Jimmy Butler one, and he did a Joakim Noah one, and they are amazing. It's like 1991 Skybox Jimmy Butler. I tweeted it out last night, I think. So go and have a look on my timeline to have a look at the guy that did it. But there was a Jimmy Butler one and a Joakim Noah, like 1990 NBA Hoops version, and the 91 Jimmy Butler Skybox one. And it looks amazing. So everybody go and check those out. Check through my timeline. I'll re-find it, and maybe I'll retweet it. But it was fantastic. That's enough talking about basketball cards and historic players. I'll let you get back to looking through Roto Monster, Sam. Let's remind everyone where they can find your work, what you've got coming up, and your Twitter stuff.
At Macetastic, the Fantasy Fix, we've got a few articles coming out in the next few weeks. There's three or four of us sort of going to try and pump out one or two, covering sleepers, busts, contract year guys. I think we'll probably do something on rotations, maybe. And I'm going to do this A to Z thing if it kills me. So
now, just
plenty to do.
On how much have you done of the contract year stuff?
To be honest, it's something I was going to do last year and forgot to do it. So the notes I've got are actually along last year's players, which is not very helpful.
No,
but
I've written mine. It took a long time to do because there's so many guys. But I think the thing that I found, the overarching theme from it, is that, yeah, some guys improve, some guys don't. It's overblown is what I'm trying to say. People always point out, you know, he's in a contract year, he played for a contract. But then there's the guys who are in a contract year who just are completely useless. You know, Rajon Rondo, Robin Lopez, who just were completely terrible. But the ones where Trevor Ariza, Kyle Lowry, those guys had big bumps. And you get a significant guys getting bumps, but you also get some guys going the wrong way. But where you get a lot of value is the guys that are getting paid peanuts on their rookie contract, and then they're going to go from $5 million a year to $15 million a year. Like, that's, yeah, the veteran guys who you might be on $7 million and then goes to $10 million. It's a bump, and I would love it. I'd love $3 million. If anyone's got $3 million they want to give me, that's fantastic. But when you go from a rookie contract to a max contract, that's when things, you know, when people really blow up. And that's the thing that I noticed when looking at the data from all these contract guys. Sam, it's been great having you on the show again. It's good to speak to you.
Yeah, man. It's been great. Thanks.
Not a problem. Follow Sam on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. And don't forget to give the podcast a subscription on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening to it, over on Audio Boom. You can leave a review. That is always very helpful. And check out the other podcasts on the Hardwood Paroxysm Pod Center. There's quite a few over there. The Over and Back series is going on. They're going through the top 50 players in NBA history. I think they just released one about Ray Allen. So you can check that one out and check out all the other podcasts on that network. Don't forget to have a look at Basketball Monster as well. Head across there and check out the membership options over there. Sam, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Night, sorry.
Time zones are night at 6 o'clock in the morning here. You're ready to go to bed. It's all happening. Thank you so much for listening, 9 everyone. O'clock, yeah. 9 o'clock is it? Okay. I'm never going to get your time zone. I don't know why. I can only handle two time zones in my head at once. And yeah, unfortunately, GMT is not one of them.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'll get it eventually. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.